You're listening to Classic Business with Michael Avery, brought to you by Altron, there when it matters.
Well, time for tonight's panel and to talk about property. Go and kick the bricks for so long, the banker and investment portfolio, safe as houses. It has lost much of its luster of late. Listed property experienced a rough ride, to say the least, last year. Average declines of 25% across the board. If you look at the index, it affected the three-year return, with investors losing 1.1% over that period, compared to gains of just under 12% for the 3 years to end December of 2017. Just shows you how bad last year was. And it prompted some in December to make predictions that the performance from real estate investment trusts, REITs, this year would bounce back quite strongly. Expectations were for of a total return of around 14%, according to Catalyst fund managers. And I see at the halfway mark, well, we're half of that. We're at 7%. So we've invited our panel tonight to take stock of the first six and peer into their crystal balls for a view of the second half. Let's start with the introductions. I'll start with ladies first. Umfele Ramakwase, the research analyst at Jones Lang LaSalle, Sub-Saharan Africa. Umfele, welcome to the show.
Thank you for inviting me.
Next to you, Kellen Ndlovu, the head of listed property funds at Stanlib. Kellen, good to see you again.
Thank you.
And John Lewis rounds off our trio tonight, property analyst at FNB. John, always a pleasure.
Thank you, Michael.
Now, perhaps you can kick us off with a bit of a macro scene setting. It's depressing. I think almost every CEO I spoke to with a SA-focused REIT in the first 6 months, Norbert Sasser, Andrew Koenig, Lawrence Rapp, they all said this is probably the worst macro that they've ever seen.
Yeah, look, it's almost back to the 1980s. You know, you get these long super cycles. I like to talk about economic super cycles and property super cycles. And the last super cycle stagnation phase was, as I call it, was sort of around about the 80s to early 90s. And the upswing in the super cycle started when we had that political change in the early 1990s, or just after that. So property goes with it, broadly speaking. And we're in a phase where since 2012, we had a bounce back in the economy, 2010, just after the financial crisis. But since then, we've been on a stagnating path. And, you know, we're down to getting excited over 1% economic growth these days. And that's not a good situation to be in. I don't think it can stop the vacancy rates from rising just yet in commercial property. And so IPD capital growth for last year, 1.7% in real terms. If you adjust it for general inflation, that's negative. And, you know, I think that's very much in line with economic fundamentals, David. And I think that's where it's probably going to stay for the foreseeable future, because we're looking at economic growth forecasts of, you know, not far from 1%.
It is unfortunate that we get excited about decimal points of growth, Kellen. How would you characterize the first half of the year in the REIT space?
Well, I guess as you mentioned earlier, that the expectations were quite high at the beginning of the year, but actually things haven't turned out to be that good. As John mentioned, if you look at GDP growth, disappointed, 1%, not exciting at all. So what we're seeing in the sector, we've seen actually earnings growth or distribution growth outlook being revised downwards. And most companies are under pressure, largely due to the vacancies and rental growth actually not coming up to the numbers that we expected, whether it's retail, office, or industrial sectors. So our distribution growth outlook, we've reduced that number to 2 to 3%. If you think at the beginning of the year, most market analysts were looking at about 4%, some 5%, but 2 is the number now.
Really has come back quite dramatically. Umfele, Jones Lang LaSalle, global research firm, you're in the Sub-Saharan Africa office. So your view is unparalleled in terms of the global reach that you have and data to draw on.
What you're seeing developers, when they were building 2-3 years ago, the assumption was that, okay, there'll be enough take up in the next 2-3 years. But unfortunately, the economy took a downturn, and that's basically affected all the decisions that were made a couple of years back.
That slack just not being picked up. John, tell me, with all this oversupply in the local office market in particular, when do we actually start to see the carrying value of these buildings adjusted?
Well, yeah, I would imagine fairly soon, because you know, I don't think vacancy rates are going to fall anytime soon. It's probably on the way up. You know, not only do we have a weak economy at You know, as I say, this year we're forecasting 0.6%, next year just over 1%. That's not enough to turn the vacancy rate around. And then on top of that, you've got technological, the march of technology. We're using office space more and more efficiently. And there's more and more talk of more and more people working from home, working remotely, and you just have hot desks. So it doesn't bode well for the office market, and I would expect at some term, at some point, yes, you've got to have that downward adjustment in valuations.
And Kieran, that does look like a big risk in an environment where we also see loan to value rates creeping up. Growth Point, for example, not singling them out, but they were one of the many that reported some creep in loan to value in an environment where there's now downward pressure on the value of your properties. That starts to enter a bit of a perfect storm territory.
Yeah, it's a tough one. If you look at the loan to value ratios, they're now approaching the 40% levels. Probably low was about 27% in 2007, so they've been creeping upwards. So 40% is a number that actually makes the market uncomfortable. What we're seeing now is that some of the companies are actually even closer to the 50% levels. But one thing to highlight is that most actually bank covenants, they require about 50 to 60% loan-to-value ratios. You'll need property market values to fall by as much as 25% to breach the debt covenants.
Right,
but so we still see actually values actually going down, or cap rates are going up more so in the office market.
So there is still what Benjamin Graham would say, a bit of a margin of safety there. 25% is some way to fall. On the vacancy front, and specifically back to Mfile's point about office space being over 10%. It does mean that landlords are going to have to offer all kinds of sweeteners. They're having to throw in everything on top of the grandmother into the lease renegotiations just to get people to stay with them. That onboarding conversation, if you're looking for new tenants, all the power does seem to be in the tenants. And in general, how are you viewing the retail space?
The retail space, I think it's going to take a hammering more than the other sectors, because the main driver for retail is households. And right now, household disposable income is declining. So there's not enough money for people to go around spending in the malls. And I mean, if you're not getting enough people into your shops, it won't produce that much sales, and it won't have enough footfall to improve trading densities. So I think trading densities will still remain quite low as they've been in the past year or so. It will depend. What will shift that will be the tenant mixture. So right now, finding the right tenant mixture will be a key for survival in the retail space.
It's very interesting, John. I was on a analyst trip to Poland as a guest of EPP to have a look at the way they, as landlords and retail mall managers, have developed a dashboard to help their smaller tenants to get ahead of the curve in tough times, to start saying, well, your footfall is dropping off, your revenue is turning off, how can we help you? How can we get ahead of the curve before you become arrears into 90 days and then all of a sudden you've got a problem? Does this require just a more adept and adroit management from some of our big landlords in South Africa?
Well, I'm not an expert on what they're doing already, but I think, yes, in these tough economic times, there's going to have to be a lot more cooperation between the landlord and the tenant, and a mutual understanding of what drives their business and what drives their footfall and their feet through door, and yes, in some case, some leniency, because you know I think what mall owners have to realize is that operating costs, for one, have increased radically. I mean, we're talking, you know, I've done some analysis since 1995, and in real terms, adjusting for GDP inflation, your operating cost per square meter has more than doubled in retail property.
And what is the biggest driver there?
Well, it's the municipal rates and the tariffs, and the electricity bills. And you say, you know, it's often that mall owners don't have control over, but the reality is it puts strain on. And obviously, rental growth has been huge as well over the past two decades, and so has capital values. You know, retail in all ways has become very expensive, and that provides a strong incentive for certain tenants to look for more affordable alternatives. Now, the smaller malls and the retail warehousing offer more affordable alternatives, and of course online shopping offers another more affordable alternative. So there's competition.
Yeah, there is,
especially for the big mall owners.
It's sometimes healthy competition, and I just use a very unscientific example here, Kellen, of what's going on in Cromerville. And you see a real mushrooming of retail focused specifically around lifestyle and home. Of tenants who perhaps used to be in big malls but just find a better deal out there in an environment where the landlords just cannot absorb any more cost pressures from increases in electricity and water, as John is saying. How do you see this altering the landscape of South African retail? Are we going to see a more, shall I call it a high street move away from the traditional shopping mall that has really been one of South Africa's strengths over the last few years? How do you see this changing the landscape?
Yeah, it's quite a challenging one in the retail space, given that we've got so much retail space and oversupplied. So what we're seeing actually now, we're seeing like some of the smaller tenants actually asking for rent reductions or less space. So lenders have to accommodate them, nest them through the tough cycle, and we're seeing actually more pop-up stores as well. So there's negatives and positives of pop-up stores. They refresh the mall. They bring a different element and vibrance into the mall. So you're seeing those aspects are coming into the market. And some of the tenants, whether it's banks or furniture stores as well, all requiring less space. And some of the space being converted more into food, beverage, entertainment as well, just to bring in more people and events into the malls. So actually most of the landlords have to be more creative with the space, and Edcon's a good example, them reducing our space as well.
I want to stay on the Edcon story for a second. It did, as I mentioned earlier, raise all sorts of debatable points. Should REITs be investing in their tenants, so to speak? Because what's to stop a Taste or a Grand Parade or another independent looking for the same deal? Should the landlords then consider offering them a similar deal? Is Edcon just a particular story of national interest? I mean, it sets a dangerous and a worrying precedent.
That's a good point, yeah. I guess probably the biggest challenge was that most of the malls, when they were built in South Africa, they were centered around Edcon. So Edcon was the key tenant. But we don't believe that you have to actually invest in a business, in a retail business. So the core business of property companies is to actually be landlords and collect rental income. So our view was that they probably should have taken that rental knock of 41% as opposed to taking equity in the business. Because over time, actually, that's going to come back as well. But how do you value that equity as well? And the challenge as well, it's difficult for other tenants to come up with that kind of proposal as well, because you can ask for rent reduction, but it's okay, give me equity in your business. So for the other national retailers, it's kind of been a move to block other tenants to come in and ask for rent reductions.
And we have also seen the competition authorities wade into a certain aspect of this when it comes to exclusive lease agreements that underpin a lot of these developments, and questioning the anti-competitive effect. So those are being phased out as well. Mfele, there's another driver. I just don't know how big it is in the retail space, and that is technology and e-commerce. And we talk about it. It gets all the hype and the headlines. Fundamentally, though, is it one of the big drivers that are leading to malls with these high vacancy rates? I mean, you walk around some of your major malls in the country, and it is alarming how many shops are standing empty.
I think e-commerce for now in South Africa, it's not such a big driver like we're seeing in the US or in the UK with the impact of Amazon. It hasn't gotten to that level yet, but it will eventually. I mean, as a shopper, if you're finding it a lot more cheaper to sit at home and just click and select what you want and go collect it rather than having to spend transport to go to the mall, and then, you know, your time is money. So it might have an impact in the long run, but right now I think e-commerce is not such a big factor in terms of retail. But I mean, also the tenant mixture, individuals now, we're looking for experience when you go shopping. You're not just looking to go get items. So like I said before, tenant mixture becomes a very important factor, where you have the entertainment, where people can sit in a restaurant, people can purchase their groceries and other items. So we want to get in the mall and get all things at once.
And that experience issue is the worry for me, because the main issue for Edcon is just kicking the can down the road. This department store business model seems to be outdated. How do you offer an experience in a department store where you need different lighting, different music, a different feel from one department to the next? And that hasn't really been answered in the restructuring for me. John, on the technology e-commerce side of things, would you agree with what Mfide is saying?
My sense is yes. I mean, it's coming. I don't think we can underestimate it in future. But I think at the moment it's the general economic environment and the weakness in the consumer that's the biggest issue as we stand now. And of course these cost issues of retail malls, that they've become so expensive. So that's old-fashioned fundamentals, I call it, are still the biggest issue. But I wouldn't underestimate e-commerce in future. It's coming, and it's coming fast, I think.
Just as we wrap up, Kellen, what's your outlook for the second half?
So we're looking at distribution growth about 2%, and in terms of total returns, we don't see any capital growth for the sector. We're just focusing income returns, and income we're looking at about 9%. So for the next year, I was just saying 2019 is going to be tough, so look 2019 into 2020, 2021.
And you might also find some attractive valuations at this time of the cycle as well. Is it a market ripe, just last question, for consolidation? Do you see M&A at least picking up in an environment like this?
Yeah, it's happening now. So Arrowhead with GemGrow, and then SA Corporate, there's two or three potential bids for SA Corporate. And we see Safari and Fairvest as well as another potential actually transaction coming up. So that's more small scale, but going to see mid-cap and possible actually at the larger cap companies as well.
Well, there you have it, kicking the bricks on the outlook for listed property on the panel tonight. Thank you very much, Kellen Ndlovu, Head of Listed Property Funds at Stanlib, John Lewis, Property Analyst at FNB, and Umfile Ramakwase, Research Analyst at Jones Lang LaSalle, Sub-Saharan Africa.